This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Phileas Club. In this episode, we talk about Brexit again with new developments and interesting information. And of course, if you enjoy this show, remember you can support it on Patreon at patreon.com/thePhileasClub. The link is in the show notes. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Phileas Club, the show where we talk to people from different countries and different cultures that have different opinions. And we usually talk about every month about the news, the things that have been happening in the world. But what we do every other episode, usually, is we do a special and we talk about one specific topic. This is the second episode of a targeted focused series about Brexit. My name is Patrick Beja, and for the second episode, I'm very happy to be welcoming the same band of joyous, almost Brits that accompanied us for the... Yes, that's why I said almost for the first episode. So we have representatives of the United Kingdom and Bart. And the Irish person who's the closest related cousin to the other present here, which I'm gonna welcome first to the show. Bart, the Irish representative, how are you doing?
I am doing absolutely fine. It's cold and chilly, but I got out from my walk. I'm all refreshed, all bubbly-eyed, ready to talk Brexit.
Well, I'm sure the other two are going to be just as pithy. Bruce, who is joining us from the land of the Scots, how is it going?
It's going okay, thanks, Patrick.
The lower tone of voice says it all. Oh. And finally, the actual Brit, the original, the holder of the Flame of Albion. Is that a thing? Probably not. Gareth, how's it going, Gareth?
Yeah, no, I'm very good this morning. Thanks, Patrick.
You have tea, so...
I have tea.
You are happy. Just a quick reminder, Gareth is the one that is helping us not be completely irrelevant by actually being the person who is for Brexit, whereas the other... Well, I guess Bruce is against it, Bart... And my opinion don't really matter all that much. Bart's probably does matter a little bit more since, you know, Ireland and Northern Ireland and all that, right?
Yeah, my opinion is anti-chaos. I don't really care which way you go on Brexit. Just don't do it chaotically.
Well, that's actually...
Too late for that.
Exactly.
I know, but could we stop, maybe?
I think this is the point of the episode where we go previously on the Brexit saga. And last episode, we were all basically at that point where it was like, honestly, no one cares what's happening anymore. Just make a decision and stick to it and just stop the insane uncertainty. And it's not even about changing opinions all the time. It's that no one knows what's happening. And I haven't been following super closely because I was traveling and there was a lot of stuff happening in my life. And honestly, it all sounds like background noise at this point, what's happening in the UK. But my understanding is that Boris Johnson managed to negotiate a slightly different deal, which didn't change much, but that he could sell as something new and different that would should be voted on. And that didn't fix any of the big issues that were holding up the deal before. But of course, you know, him being in the position that he is in, he was like, all right, this is my plan. It's cool. It works. And of course, it didn't pass Parliament. And there was an extension of a few more months. And so we're still back where we were, you know, for the past couple of years. Who is there one person amongst you who is
Patrick,
brave?
You out something vital.
Mm-hmm.
Followed by a general election being announced in Britain.
Oh, well, see, there you go. That I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even heard that. So is there one of you who wants to be the courageous, brave hero of this episode and summarize what happened in the last month? Because for those who don't know, Brexit was the last date where it was supposed to happen was about 10 days ago, end of October. Obviously, it didn't happen.
Patrick, I'll half volunteer. I'll volunteer to talk about the Irish bit, and I'll leave my colleagues from the other side of the pond to talk about what's going on inside the UK itself.
So let's start with the UK itself, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Bruce or Gareth, you are the only two remaining choices.
Okay. Gareth, I don't know if you... Yeah, you start.
I mean, I think obviously it's more detailed and more complicated, but I think the upside is essentially what you've just said, Patrick, is Boris said he wasn't going to ask for an extension. Parliament voted and said that he had to and it would be illegal if he didn't. So he did. He said he would rather be dead in a ditch than have the extension. He's not dead in a ditch. So we also had another vote, parliamentary vote. As you say, it didn't go through, and kind of I think as a result of that, there was kind of the realization that because nobody in Parliament has a majority at the moment, it's going to be really difficult to get any kind of vote through. So the idea is that we need to have a general election. We'll do that 2 weeks before Christmas because. Can't think of a better time to do that.
It keeps this series going, you know. That is I was thinking maybe we don't need to do episodes every month, but that definitely changes that.
Well, the election is slated for the 12th, so we need to give it a month and a week maybe and see where we're at. So we're going to have a general election. I don't think realistically anybody knows who they should vote for because none of the parties seem to be particularly clear about exactly what they're doing. Most of them are concentrating on their position over Brexit or their lack of position over Brexit. Nobody really seems to be saying what they want to do as a government once Brexit is done, if it ever is. So it's really, really confusing. Nobody really knows who they should be voting for. We don't seem to have enough independent candidates, which is what I personally feel that we need more of in the UK.
Well, we'll go into everyone thinks.
Question. So my understanding of what happened in Parliament just before the election was called was that the Parliament sort of half agreed with Boris's deal, but said not now. Is that?
Yes.
So they got to the second stage vote, but didn't get it passed. And then they said, we'll do it later. And Boris said, no, you won't. We're having an election or something like that.
I'm not sure on that bit, honestly.
Bruce, you seem to have an opinion on that.
I'm trying to remember now because the twists and turns. They did agree with the deal, but they said that they didn't agree with his timeline in that they wanted an extension and that there was a possibility that they might vote for another referendum. So what they did was that basically made it so that Boris couldn't force it through before the 31st of October. So he then had to come back and say, you know, that. Mm. That's from what I remember. Now,
It was, you know, about 2 weeks ago, which so much has happened since then that was a lifetime ago and no one remembers it.
Right, but the thing is, for the first time, the Parliament actually did agree to a version of a deal. Yeah. So that at least is progress.
Can we go back to that deal very quickly that was agreed? In that, I don't know if we discussed it on the last show, I forget, but we spoke about this deal. And what the deal basically is Theresa May's deal with Northern Ireland pretty much chucked out of the EU, but chucked out of the UK, which the DUP didn't like very much. Is that correct?
No.
I remember.
Okay, let's get to the Irish.
No. That's the bit I have volunteered to try explain. Yeah. And
okay, yeah.
Perfect.
Okay, I'll leave that to you. But where were we? So yeah, he's called a general election, and that's on. Yeah.
So just before we get to Bart, how long is the extension now?
Is it the end of January?
End of January, yeah.
It's a flex extension. Oh my God,
no, it's a 3-month flex extension. So there's three exit ramps. There's the first exit ramp is the 31st of December. Sorry, the 31st of November. Then there's one on the 31st of December, and then the 31st of January is the end of the flex extension. So in theory, it can't happen because of the general election. But in theory, the UK could leave at the end of this month, or they could try again at the end of December. And at the moment, the actual exit date is the end of January.
Okay.
I was just going to say, who in their right mind would try and do that in the middle of the new year? Who in their right mind ends up in a situation like this in the first place, I suppose?
I'm not sure right minds is the standard you want to set for this discussion. But Bart, tell us about the Irish bit, which, of course, as people know, is the, I guess it's fair to say, the key problem that has locked this whole affair for the past several months, a year or so. But yeah, go ahead with the Irish bit, Bart.
Yeah, so the root of the problem, like you say, is what to do with the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And remember that it's something we forgot to say. We said it in the post show last time, and then we all kicked ourselves for saying it after we'd finished recording. But all of this shenanigans that killed Theresa May's entire government, and all of this shenanigans has now put Boris back in a general election, it's all about negotiating the withdrawal agreement, which is literally step one of a two-step process. And step two is a much bigger step than step one. Step one is get out. Step two is negotiate a permanent relationship. So what will happen going forward when the UK is not a member of the EU? Will there be some sort of trade deal? I mean, that's the huge, you know, will the UK be Norway? Will the UK be Switzerland? Will the UK be some whole new thing? That's massive. And that hasn't even started yet because they can't agree on how to leave. Like, we're just at the dividing our stuff bit now. Mm. And the thing that was derailing it all was that border in Northern Ireland. Now, what the Irish government want and what the EU want, and also what is kind of required by the Good Friday Agreement, is that that border remain transparent, that you can continue to freely move over and back across that border. And that means you can't really have Northern Ireland not be aligned customs wise with the EU, because then you'd have to have checks. So it's sort of the tail that wags the dog. And the problem was, the original agreement was a so-called backstop, that if phase two went horribly wrong, the default position is that Northern Ireland stays in the EU. So that's what the backstop was. It was just, if you can't do step two, then the default becomes that Northern Ireland stays. And that's not acceptable to the unionists, who don't like this idea that they're now completely held hostage to succeeding in doing the more difficult thing when we can't even do the easy thing. And if I was a unionist, I could see their point. So Boris's solution is Schrodinger's cat of Northern Ireland. Officially, the Northern Ireland will be both inside and simultaneously outside of the UK. It will be in the EU customs area and in the UK customs area. And there will be sort of a hypothetical border in the Irish Sea, but don't worry, it's not a real one, it's just a little bit of paperwork. And there'll be a hypothetical border as well between Ireland and Northern Ireland, but don't worry, it's not a real one, it's just some paperwork. And if you're an Irish person sending stuff to the north, or a Northern Irish person sending stuff to the south, you just say, you fill in some paperwork, and it's magically, this transaction is an EU transaction. And if you're not, then it's magically a UK transaction. And so you have your cake and you eat it, and actually what you have is mass confusion. No one understands what's going on, but it's a wonderful Brussels-esque fudge. It's a kind of fudge to keep Belgium alive.
So how does it fix the issues that Brexit is trying to address, or the perceived issues of immigration, dependent, you know, the imports of, you know, control over your own? Is it just like, okay, we'll have this little bit, which might be a little bit quote unquote dangerous because people might get in. This is still part of, it's still a bridge, but it mostly fixes everything else. And there's no giant access to the UK via, you know, the channel.
It's not clear. It's completely not clear. Remember, the deal was negotiated at the absolute last minute, and Boris tried to drive it through Parliament just before the 31st, which is why Parliament were like, yeah, okay, this is a deal. We're not saying no to this deal, but we're so saying no to doing it straight away because none of us have figured out the implications. The Ulster Unionists are deeply disturbed by the concept of there being any sort of division in the Irish Sea, right? The concept of being in the EU, or sorry, in the UK, but different, that is fundamentally unacceptable to a unionist. The whole concept of unionism is that you want to stay in the United Kingdom. So being separate but equal or being different is not compatible with unionism, which is why the unionists do not support this new Boris deal.
So they managed to vote to get it voted through anyway, though. So they got
Labour
pieces. Okay. All right. I'm going to turn to, I guess we're going to go to every member of the panel now and ask what you think. Starting with Gareth, because the point of Brexit is that you close the borders and you have control over what happens within the UK, right? But with this weird magical land of Northern Ireland being still that bridge, essentially what I was saying earlier, in theory, people could still come through Northern Ireland, I guess, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess my logic from the onset was that I want something that's sensible and that works, and also, you know, we had that brilliant conversation where we talked about the talking monkey.
For those who don't remember, the whole issue of Ireland was that it was asking for something that couldn't be done, and the problem was. oh God, brain fart! I can't remember his name. David Cameron was like. Proposing something, putting a vote to the British people, and one of the choices was something that couldn't be achieved. So there was this disconnect there, and the fault relying on him for saying, well, if you want this, you can vote on it. And what we were realizing, mostly thanks to Gareth's complaints, was that if it wasn't possible, you shouldn't have put it forth in a vote to begin with. So, yeah. Anyway, so that was the talking monkey. Do you want this or do you want a talking monkey? People chose a talking monkey, and now we're like, okay, bad news, guys. We don't have a talking monkey. So what you're saying is, since it's a talking monkey, then we need something else because the talking monkeys don't exist. So this might be a good alternative.
And this might be the alternative, yeah. I mean, it gives us... I think it gives the majority, you know, the UK mainland, it gives us more control over borders. And I don't necessarily... I'm not on the right wing of the idea of Brexit here, so it's not a concern about free movement necessarily. Mm. But I do feel that if the only border that we're not more closely policing is the one with Northern Ireland, that is a significantly smaller border. And presumably there would be checks. I mean, I'm not 100% sure whether you need to use a passport to get from the UK to Northern Ireland. I've never actually visited Ireland, which is a shame.
You have to show ID to get on a plane, right? So there's definitely always been ID checks anyway, because you can't just get on an airplane without showing some sort of photo ID. I mean, I know they accept that you don't need a passport, but you do need photo ID, like your driver's license. So there's something there.
Yeah. Well, the reason why you don't need the ID or the passport is because we're part of the EU, part of the free movement of people. Now, if we leave the EU, then we will need a passport and possibly a visa, although that's been written off by now. So it kind of puts a situation where you've got Northern Ireland needing, they're going to have borders on both sides. There's no ways about it. So Yeah, sorry, carry on, Gareth.
I mean, that was kind of where I was getting to, really. So there's still going to be significant controls on movements from Ireland stroke Northern Ireland to the UK mainland. But it's not like those aren't there in some way, shape or form currently. So, you know, it might be tighter. It might be that you need a passport and you can't travel on your driving license if that's what works currently. But I think it might be the talking monkey. You know, it might be the solution that's not there. And I get that it's not going to be ideal. I get that there's going to be sides there that are not happy with it, whichever way it goes.
But you can live with it. Well, essentially, it addresses a lot of parts.
I'm a bit sorry. I want to hold Gareth up on that. Is that the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland at the moment is, and Bart can correct me on this, it's pretty much non-existent. It's just
invisible.
It's invisible. Yeah. You can drive through backwards and forwards, no problem, all day, every day. But if there's a border with the EU, that changes. You're going to need to have border checks, even under the...
What's not going to change here, right? So what's changing here is that Northern Ireland is both in and out, so you don't have that border check. The only thing you have is some paperwork if you're bringing goods across. So it's a purely customs thing. And what you need the paperwork to do is to say that the two people in this transaction are both either Northern Irish or Irish, and therefore the border doesn't count. So that's what you need. And the reason that border in the Irish Sea is so much more workable is that you have to get on a plane or a boat, whereas the border physically on the land of Ireland is not like that.
Yeah, and that's my understanding as well, which is why, you know, from my standpoint, you know, and I'm a little bit ignorant to the politics of Ireland and Northern Ireland, you know, I'll be completely honest, but that's my understanding is that the land border there will remain completely open and transparent. It will be incumbent on the person that's moving goods to declare them, which isn't great, but it's also not necessarily the end of the world.
So it addresses a huge amount of your issues, and this one might not, you know, make the cut, but you can live with it.
Yeah, obviously needs to be some kind of compromise made, and this seems like one that is a good one.
I just don't see how that'll work in practice, because you are going to have some checks to stop. People are going to take advantage of that and move illegal goods through the border, and whether they've got the papers or not, because who's going to check the papers? Who's going to know if I've got in my car £10 of contraband, whatever that is, and I have no papers and I declare it nowhere, and then I then put that into another car who's somebody who's a member of the EU, of the UK, and then I take a ferry across or whatever to the rest of the UK. In essence, there's been no border checks at all.
I think that's
the ferry's where they get you, right? So the ferry is where they get you, not the physical land border in Northern Ireland. Hence, it's solving the problem.
Yeah, so there might be some illegal trade and movement of goods into Northern Ireland or out of Northern Ireland, but essentially you're not going to be able to do that in bulk.
I think I think it's fair to say there can be and there probably will be some abuses to the system, but it's still going to be a more controlled system than the one that currently exists.
And you have random checks, right? So yeah. It's already started to ramp up. I've already seen more checkpoints from the Irish customs agents and stuff randomly setting up and stopping trucks looking for paperwork and stuff. I mean, we've already recruited a massive amount of new customs officers. It's not going to be that you have to stop and queue and show papers and cross the border, but it absolutely will be the case that just like there's a speed trap every now and then, there will be randomly moving enforcement on both sides of that border where Her Majesty's Customs Service and the Republic of Ireland's Customs Service will have random checkpoints stopping lorries.
So in essence, it isn't a talking monkey because it implements some light version of a division between, well, I guess both Northern Ireland and Ireland and Northern Ireland and the UK. There is going to be... customs to go through. Now, if you're an Irish or Northern Irish citizen, then it should be much easier for you to go through, but it implements some kind of a border.
Right, but there won't be anything physical, right? So no, it won't be physically visible. So this whole idea that it'll be invisible remains true. So you, as a human being traveling across that line on a map, will see nothing, right? There's not going to be a post. There's not going to be a man in a uniform. It will remain invisible. But you, as a lorry driver, know that anywhere within, you know, 20 or 30 miles of that imaginary line, you could be stopped at any moment and asked to show a piece of paper.
Mm. Okay. Well, I mean, it's not, I don't think it is what people, and that's why the unionists didn't vote for it, because it doesn't satisfy the original requirements that were promised, I think, but it's still something that seems workable. I want to ask about the election as well in a second, but before we do that, I also want to ask Bruce what you think of that deal. You seem to be grumbling a little bit.
I don't believe it's workable. I don't think it's
actually...
Why not?
It seems the way Bart and Gareth and me describe it seem, you know, like it would be feasible.
I think the people of Northern Ireland would I don't know. It's this Monday morning also, so I'm trying to get my head around.
Are you sure this isn't just you being frustrated that Brexit might be going through because this deal might be voted on by Parliament?
I can't see the British government, the Irish government, the European government, and the Northern Irish government coming to an agreement, because they haven't even started that, on what actually constitutes the borders between the two different countries. Now,
but haven't they, isn't that the agreement that was just the deal that was just voted on?
This is all for the withdrawal. This is still the withdrawal, right? This is still step one. There's nothing here about what actually happens for the future. This is just to get us to the point where we can start arguing about the real problem to be solved.
Just to be clear, so this is for the withdrawal from the EU, but that doesn't fix... What you're saying, Bruce, is that that state between Northern Ireland, Ireland, and the UK would not be acceptable to the EU, you mean, for the future? And there wouldn't be trade agreements?
I don't think it's sustainable, and trade agreements, it's too porous, I think, is the word I'm looking for. There's too many holes in it. And yes, it sounds good on paper, but I just think in practice, you're going to find so many problems with it. And it's going to end up needing a lot more checks than people think. And I go back to the same thing I go back to all the time, is that I recently went to Belgium. I was actually there on the supposed Brexit day. And, I was able to walk through, just wave my passport at a machine and walk back into the UK and walk out of the UK, whereas there were huge queues for non-EU residents. Now, I cannot see a situation where people who are wanting to get into the UK illegally will not use less restricted ways to illegally get into the country and do
well,
it
I think
much
if that,
more
if
easily.
That happens,
much more easily.
If that happens, then it means the border between, you know, that Irish border, whichever Ireland you want to talk about, might start getting beefed up. I think that's one.
Well, if anything gets beefed up, it'll be the one in the Irish Sea, because that's actually physically beef upable, right? You cannot walk from Northern Ireland to the rest of the United Kingdom. Either get wet, which is not realistic. It's bloody cold in the Irish Sea. So you have to take a boat or you have to take a plane. So you have to physically be at a port, either an airport or a seaport. So if there's ever going to be enforcement of borders, the only place that is practicable is at the ports and seaports in Northern Ireland. So that's why the Ulster unionists are so scared of this, because...
Well, it seems like an unavoidable consequence.
Fudge, right? Yeah. Absolutely. So this is a fudge to get us to the point where the UK has actually Brexited. And then a real solution has to be negotiated. This is not a real solution. Mm. And that real solution is going to end up beefing up one of those two borders. And whichever one it is going to cause chaos, because either it's going to be completely unacceptable to the nationalist /Republic of Ireland, or to the unionists /British. But it doesn't. It just kicks a can down the road, right? It says, I think, get Brexit done, and then we'll figure the.
We'll worry about Ireland. So essentially. Okay. The big problem, which was Ireland, is still there. It's just going to be there in 6 months, a year. I guess that's what you were getting at, Bruce.
Yes, thank you, Bart, for laying that out. Because those were my frustrations exactly with it. Is it's not a long term solution at all.
So there will need to be some kind of a border check that is more beefed up at one of the borders of Northern Ireland, which is exactly the problem we were talking about. Yeah.
And just to go very quickly back on Bart's point there, one of the things he's saying is that one of the borders is going to get beefed up, and it's most likely going to be the one between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. And what that's going to do is give the Scottish nationalists a lot more leeway, a lot more leverage in getting Scottish independence, because Northern Ireland are most likely not going to want that. They're going to see Ireland as a much friendlier place. You'll probably find the mood in Northern Ireland is going to go more towards the what are the people who like the Irish, you know, being part of Ireland. I don't know that part,
you mean,
but I think
a unified Ireland.
Unified Ireland.
The Republican side. And the demographics are that way too, right? So the way the population has been changing over time has been a pretty steady curve. The Unionists have fewer babies than the Republicans, and it is just a matter of time until the current majority inverts, and then you have a situation where the majority are in favour of a united Ireland as opposed to being Unionist. And that's also preying on the minds of the Unionist politicians here, because they know that if they leave this to be a democratic, if they leave this to be a referendum 10 years from now, they're in big, big trouble.
Gareth, I'll go back to you before we talk about the general election. Mm-hmm. That also seems like a plausible consequence down the line, and the issue of it actually, you know, creating a stronger border. That's an issue, right? I mean, if Ireland, Northern Ireland, starts to become more separate from the UK, and then potentially it gives ideas to those pesky Scots, that's an issue for the UK, right? For your country, isn't it? And I by that, I mean, is it a concern for you, or is it not?
It's not a concern for me personally. I mean, I think if we're in a position where the majority of people who live in Northern Ireland would prefer to be Irish than British, then that seems like a sensible thing to do, surely. Now, I know clearly it's not that straightforward, but, you know, that it's...
No, but I mean, what if that happens in Ireland and then in Scotland, and, you know, what's the UK, isn't the UK diminished? Isn't that, in that sense, a concern for you? You know, you've scattered your
If you look at the United Kingdom of Great Britain and the Commonwealth as is or was, we are significantly diminished from where we were 200 years ago anyway. So, you know, let's
keep going down that road.
I don't necessarily think that we should deliberately go down that road. But if the sensible conclusion to the will of the people who live in a specific area is that that's what should happen, then why should it not happen? You know, providing that everything that remains is a viable country. Do you know, if the Isle of Man said no, we want to be off on our own, you know, sat there in the middle of the Irish Sea, that might be a bit of an issue, because I don't necessarily know that you can have a country that small. Maybe you can. I don't really, you know.
You can't help someone else, right? Someone has to promise someone has to guarantee you militarily, because you can't do it by yourself. So, yeah, that's very, very different to the Scots.
Yeah. I mean, certainly Scotland, Ireland, and, you know, other smaller parts of bigger countries.
Wales.
I mean, I don't know if Wales is thinking about seceding, but they could have relationships with the EU. They would survive. So I guess in that sense, Gareth, I understand what you're saying. It's just that it seems the prestige and strength and the amount that the UK matters in that world is less, when maybe that's a something I'm assuming, an assumption on my part, it seems to me that what the Brexiters want is a stronger... The reason for the autonomy and ability to decide more for yourself is that you want the UK to be stronger, and it seems that would lead to a weaker UK. But, you know...
Patrick, yeah, I mean, there's a dynamic there, right? Scotland is... Where Scotland is, the natural trading partners for Scotland are Northern Ireland and Scandinavia. And they will... You know, Northern Ireland will... is likely to be somehow pseudo-linked to the EU because of the Good Friday Agreement.
Right.
So being not in the UK may be advantageous for Scotland for trading west, and for trading east, it's an open and shut case. Of course, it's economically better for Scotland to be able to trade with Scandinavia.
Of course.
So yeah. there's a pull factor there that definitely makes Scottish independence, which only lost by a few percentage points a few years ago, there's a definite pull factor there to encourage Skexit or whatever we're calling it. Mm.
Yeah, but I think it would be arrogant of the UK as a whole to say, actually, we want to separate from Europe because we want more control over our own affairs, and to then say to Scotland, oh no, but you can't have that as well.
Right, of course. I guess separatists are always in that same logic for everyone, obviously, because it would defeat their point if they said, oh, but you can't. It's the same issue with Catalonia and Corsica and all of those regions that would like independence. But okay, I guess on that strength of the UK issue, we'll have to wait and see a few decades to see what happens. But
it's part two is going to determine that, Patrick. The whatever ends up happening in the second half of this issue is going to determine how likely Scotland is to leave or how likely Wales is to leave, because whatever that permanent arrangement is, that's going to set the stage, really, for Scotland to reevaluate where are we, right? What's better for us?
Mm.
This general election is going to be huge for Scotland and for the whole of the UK. All predictions are that Conservatives are going to get wiped off the map, and it'll be a completely SNP / Lib Dem who will take maybe one or two seats as Scottish representation. That's what it's saying at the moment. There may be one Scottish MP who can get through, but the Scottish people are fed up with the Tories now. They want out, and the mood is...
And just to be clear, the Tories are the ones that are pro-Brexit, or...?
Yes, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Whereas the SNP are completely anti, as are the Lib Dems.
That's where I was going to go with the general election. It's even more important than everything else we've discussed. Isn't it kind of a referendum on Brexit, in a sense?
I think in Scotland it's easier to have that distinction, but and while they are saying that in the rest of the UK, I don't think it is, because as Gareth just said there, you know, that most of the Conservatives are pro Brexit, but not all of them are. Most of the people who vote Labour are anti Brexit, but not necessarily all. In fact, something that it would no deal Brexit was in the manifestos of 80%. So 80% of the vote share voted for parties who specifically said they wanted no deal. They didn't want no deal. And the Tories were chasing that and saying there was a mandate for it for years. So it can be that a general election can be read in whatever way the parties want, unless completely pro-Remain parties win, i.e. the Liberal Democrats and the SNP and all that, it's not going to say much. It's not going to say much at all. And there's also the you have to factor in the unlikability at the moment of Jeremy Corbyn, who is the Labour leader. For whatever reason, people in Britain do not like him and do not want to vote for him as prime minister. So you know, even if they're pro Remain, they might not like Corbyn, so they either won't vote or they'll vote for something else. So to answer your question, No, I don't think it is a pseudo referendum. I don't think so at all.
Can I ask a question as an outsider looking in? So the way I think I see it, and please correct me if I've missed this, because I'm not in the weeds here at all. Mm-hmm. It's the position of the Conservative Party / the Tory Party, i.e. Boris Johnson's party, for those not familiar with the British, I guess, slang for their political parties. Their position is really, really clear. Vote for us is a vote for Brexit. But a vote for the Labour Party seems extremely fuzzy to me. I think it's a vote for we'll negotiate a deal that we probably may not want, and then we'll have a referendum after we negotiate the deal and we'll get it all done in 6 months.
Yes.
That's my understanding as well, pretty much.
Yeah, it's very fuzzy. And even me as a pro-Remainer, I don't trust them. I don't know what they would do. So
there's no clear choice for people who, because this might be seen as an opportunity to remain, vote for remain for the people who want to remain. That's what a lot of them have been calling for. They want another referendum and they want to undo the one from 2 years ago. It seems like this would be an opportunity for that. If one party would say, if we get voted in, we will do what we can, you know, no big promises, but we'll do what we can to undo the Brexit.
And well, no, the Lib Dems are promising that, right? The Lib Dems are saying, if you vote for us, we will withdraw Article 50. But the thing is, the Lib Dems are the third party, right? They are, I mean, their peak was something like 12 MPs or something, if I'm vaguely remembering correctly.
No, it was more than that. It was 24 or 25.
Out of 100?
Out of 300 and something.
300, geez. So, yeah. Okay, so...
Just to add a wrinkle to that while we're on the Lib Dems, they are blamed for all the ills that happened under the last Conservative government because they went into partnership with them. So they're not trusted now. So even though they are the only pro-Remain party, people will not vote for them because they see austerity, because they see the student loan thing that Nick Clegg went back on. So there's a, you know, they're not everyone who's Remain is going to vote for them. And that is the problem.
Okay, what about Plaid Cymru? Because I've heard they've gone into some sort of pact with the Lib Dems. Is that all noise or is there value to that?
I don't think they're as big as they would like to be.
Okay, we're getting a bit in the weeds there, but mm-hmm. I guess the question, look again from the outside looking in, like kind of like Bart, is if there's a majority that gets elected that wants to withdraw Article 50, however it happens, that could lead to a cancellation of Brexit, I suppose, right?
Instantly. Yes. No, instantly. That's the off switch. You just, Parliament votes to withdraw Article 50. It is done. That is it. End of story. Control Z, Command Z, it never happened.
But all three of you seem to be saying this is unlikely to happen.
Maybe after a referendum, maybe. Hmm.
Gareth, what do you think?
I think possible? I just think because... you know, again, I'm in a position where I'm sat looking at this and thinking, what these people that are elected to represent us just need to get their act in order. If people want to vote based on the Brexit situation, I think that's a bad idea personally, because what we're voting for is the government that's going to lead the country on everything. So I don't necessarily think you should vote on how they are going to react to Brexit. You should be looking at what they are actually going to do to the country.
I mean, it seems like Brexit is going to Brexit is going to determine the future of everything in the country as well. I don't think it's completely unreasonable to think this is... Usually I don't like one-issue voters, but on this one, it seems like the most reasonable one-issue vote that you could think of. Don't you think it's that at least the most important issue, Gareth?
It's probably the most important issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, granted. So it's not, yes, it's not completely unreasonable to vote based on that, I don't suppose. But, you know, when we have, you know, we have websites that are telling us how to vote tactically and what we should be doing to get the right results in your area, I kind of think that's just wrong. You should be voting for the party or the candidate that is saying they will do the things that you want. Overall, Yeah,
I mean,
and maybe the Brexit position is part of your decision making process. Maybe it's 80%. Maybe it's 90% of your decision making process, but it shouldn't be all of it.
Fair enough.
You know,
I'm really happy I don't have to cast a vote in that election. No, but seriously, it shouldn't be a one issue vote. But how do you mentally weight Brexit as anything but? I just can't imagine myself thinking it less than 50% of my decision. I'm so glad I'm not voting.
It seems like it's easy for Gareth to follow that that intellectual path, because the choice for you, Gareth, seems, I mean, I'm presuming how you will vote, but it's like the party and the Brexit issue kind of seem to align. So of course for you, it's like, yep, there you go. That's what I'm voting and done. And so for everyone else, it's a lot more difficult to make the choice.
But I very much feel like, I will be completely open that I've almost always voted Conservative. I think I voted Lib Dem a couple of elections ago because I was fed up with the same old, same old. Mm. But I'm sat here now thinking, I genuinely don't know. I don't like That's the noises that my local politician is making. Mm. You know, he's been the MP for Stone since God was a lad. you know, essentially, unless something really, really weird happens, he's getting in again. Mm. And I don't think, you know, there are lots of local issues that I don't think he's doing the best thing for my town, Stone, where I live. I don't think he's doing the best things for the town as a whole. And I don't necessarily think he's completely representing the voice of the people in his constituency in Parliament.
Well,
it's better than a lot. He's better than a lot, but then there's no alternative.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It would be interesting if you, Gareth, ended up voting for someone who is for Remain because of all of these other issues that you are actually concerned about even more. I mean, we're talking science fiction here, but.
Yeah, but that's the position that I feel I am probably in at the moment. Mm, is I think I'm going to end up voting for somebody who I disagree with on the Brexit front because I agree with of their principles on everything else, and that obviously puts me in a very compromising situation. Really,
you've no good choice, right? Because it's a first past the post system, so you're really left in a rock and a hard place, which is why I'm so happy I'm not voting. I have another question from the outside looking in.
Just before I want to acknowledge something that, you know, I just half berated you, Gareth, for that idea that you should vote for against, and you're actually proving that you're walking the walk of the talk you're talking, and that's commendable. So I just want to acknowledge that. Bart, go ahead, and then we'll talk about Northern Ireland and how things are going there for the vote, and then we'll end the show.
Yeah, so the news always keeps mentioning Nigel Farage now, because he said, you know, his Brexit party is obviously, it seems relevant somehow, a party called the Brexit Party.
Yep.
How relevant is he actually on the ground? Because from the outside looking in, he gets all the headlines. But from the inside looking out, how relevant is he?
Nigel, who?
he's the head of a Brexit party, which actually isn't technically a political party. It's a company. And he is not standing for a seat in his constituency. So that should tell you everything you need to know about Nigel Farage, in my opinion.
So you don't think his party is going to take all the Conservative seats end up in charge?
I think they're going to be big players. I think they are. But and Boris Johnson is courting Nigel Farage as we speak. He's sort of saying, oh, well, you know, because Nigel Farage doesn't want a transition period. He wants to go straight into no deal Brexit. He wants no dealings with the EU whatsoever, because I suspect he has taxes offshore that he doesn't want to come under the new EU regulations. But that's just me being cynical.
The business community can't be in favor of that level of suicide Brexit.
I think there are disaster capitalists at the center of this who are profiting from it and will profit.
Selling.
Yeah, short selling, and I think there's also issues. There's the new EU law coming in that restricts and monitors offshore tax avoidance, basically. So you know, there are issues here with the rich and famous, or who are going to get caught out if we stay in the EU. So there's a big incentive for them to fund newspapers and politicians to have, especially a no deal Brexit. A no deal Brexit will be perfect for them. They'll make billions out of it.
I'm not going to lie, Bruce. That sounds a little bit conspiracy theory-ist, but. Sure.
If you, it doesn't sound beyond the pale, though, does it? That's the concerning thing.
No, it doesn't. It's from what I've seen, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. That's what every conspiracy theorist says. That's what it looks like to me. I'll just add in one more thing, and I keep bleating on about this. I think it's tomorrow. There's a court hearing into the Leave EU and the funding that went into the Leave campaign. It's still going back to that, where they might officially find that the referendum was outright illegal, and that the triggering of Article 50 might be legally revoked. I think it's a very, very small chance.
Yeah,
but it is something that's going through the courts at the moment.
All right.
So yeah, I'll leave it there.
Bart. How are things going for this election in Northern Ireland?
Well, there's a bizarre situation up north that they don't have that many MPs, but if this ends up being a hung parliament, then you don't necessarily need massive amounts of extra MPs to get you over that magic 50%. And so you have the situation where in Northern Ireland, the Republican Party, Sinn Féin, they run in the election, but they do not take their seats in Westminster. So every seat they win is effectively a seat in Parliament that vanishes into the ether. And so in the last election, a lot of the seats went to the Ulster Unionists, who propped up Boris Johnson's government. Like, he needed them for his majority, as did Theresa May. And they're now not on side anymore, because they're against this fudgy deal with Northern Ireland being, you know, Schrodinger's country or whatever. And so if you're pro-Brexit in the north, or if you're anti-Brexit in the north, it's really, really, really unclear what you do, because the unionists now don't know whether they're coming or going on the issue. The Republicans know what they want, but they won't take their seats in Parliament. So voting for them doesn't really vote pro-Brexit either.
So you mean they don't take their seats in Parliament as like a protest? They just don't go there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, yes. So there's literally, they refuse to swear an oath of loyalty to Queen Elizabeth, because just take your seat in Parliament, you swear loyalty to the Queen by name. Mm-hmm. And so they refuse to swear to their loyalty to Her Majesty. So therefore they are never seated. So the seat is theirs in terms that they won it, but physically in Parliament, they will never vote because they never take the oath and they are not seated. Mm. So it's absolutely bizarre. So I have no idea how someone up north is supposed to vote.
I think we need more independent MPs who are prepared to align their opinion with the people in their constituency.
Yeah. It's really difficult, though. Is that really a solution? Because then, you know, I understand the value of multi-partyism. When you look at the US, I think a lot of people think, well, that doesn't work with two parties trusting everything. It just doesn't work. But more independence, you have a number of parties that defend a number of different views. It seems like there should be, you know, one that aligns enough with your views and that has the structure and the infrastructure to actually matter and for you to understand what they stand for. Because independents are, you know, if all of these parties are there and you still need independence, like, what does the independent stand for? Maybe you know a couple of issues that they stand for, but then all of the other ones, you're not never certain. Unless you, I guess you can, I don't know, read through
but
their
you're
programs.
More certain, that, Patrick. No, you're more certain, because what they say is what they actually mean. The problem you have with the party system is it doesn't actually matter what your local MP says he believes in, because the party whip will force him to vote the party way, regardless of how he feels about it. he may choose once or twice in a career to effectively get ejected from the party, like 20 Conservatives did a while ago, or, you know, a few weeks ago. But that's really, yeah, but really rare.
But I think there's value in a party line.
In a first-past-the-post system, you end up with a place where only 37% of British people voted for the Conservatives, but they had a majority of seats in Parliament when you include the Ulster Unionists. So with the first-past-the-post system and the party system, the actual opinions of your local MPs become really irrelevant unless they're independent, and that's not comfortable as a voter.
Mm-hmm. No, and you end up, you know, for example, My local MP could have a session, could sit down, the entire town could turn up, we could have a vote on how we as a town want something to happen. It could be 100% in favour of something. He goes to Parliament and the whip says, nah, sorry, mate. Yeah. And he can't vote for the people.
In the case of something that is very local, that's the problem. Well, we're gonna start remaking the world now, so we're gonna stop talking very soon, but that's the problem with representative entities. You cannot please everyone, because if you try to please everyone in every instance, then you get chaos and nothing gets done. You can't pull resources together and accomplish big things. You are then limited by the resources of your local community. And that's great when you want something specific to be done, but when you want more ambitious things to get done, then doesn't work because no one agrees.
But there are ways of measuring the effectiveness of a representative democracy. Different representative democracies have different mechanisms for capturing that consensus so you can make decisions. And you can measure the effectiveness by looking at how the vote translates to the parliament. And one of the single worst systems for getting a representative parliament is first past the post, because first past the post inevitably drives the system to a two-party system, which means you end up with no real choice. And any vote for anyone else is effectively a spoiler, so it's effectively a vote against your interest. The only way to have a representative democracy where the seats in Parliament reflect the views of the country is with any sort of rank voting of any kind, but it can't be first past the post. That is guaranteed to have an unrepresentative Parliament. You can measure it. You can measure the difference between the Parliament seats and the first preference votes, sure, and first past the post is terrible.
I will agree that ranking votes is something that we need to explore more, and there have been a lot of grumblings in, I think, at least in France. I don't know about other countries, but it's been discussed many, many times, and I think it's an idea that's gaining popularity.
So. Patrick, I beg you to give me an hour of your time and do a special someday. I am so fascinated by voting systems and their effect. It's such a pet project of mine.
I think that would actually be a very interesting one. So maybe we'll get that done.
Isn't Germany representative?
I mean,
I think
they have a system that is similar to ours for electing their governments, their representatives. I don't think they have a ranking system. Okay. But we'll get to discuss that at some point, Bart. Hopefully in 2020 we'll do a special on voting systems. That would be super interesting. All right. We're going to bring this show to a close. Any concluding thoughts from any of you? We'll be back in, you know, probably next month after the general election to continue that incredible saga. But before
I have a question for our two United Kingdom representatives. Mm-hmm. How likely do you think it is that the Parliament will be able to elect a prime minister after this general election?
Not likely at all. Patrick, just to pull a Scott Johnson, but I called it. I said we wouldn't leave on the 31st, and we didn't. Just remember, I called that.
to be fair, I think most people would have expected that.
No,
it's not. You were the only one. Okay.
How did my coin flip go? I remember I flicked the coin to figure out whether I thought you'd leave or stay, but I don't remember how the coin landed.
Wait, let me flip the coin.
And I'm not surprised to find that I was wrong, but you know, it happened before, and I'm sure it'll happen another, you know, two or three times in my life.
No, to answer your question, but I I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think anyone's going to have a majority. Having a majority on any issue is just no. I think we're probably going to rumble into the new year with this.
Yeah,
that's my answer.
I don't necessarily know whether we can be in a position for too long where we don't have, a proper sitting parliament. Although
the Belgians have been at it 11 months.
Yeah.
It's been known to happen in some countries. So
on the Scottish side, I've said it already. I think the Conservatives are going to get completely wiped out, and Scotland is going to call a second referendum, independence referendum.
Oh wow! Okay.
I just hope if they did that, they wait until this situation. I nearly said mess. This situation is cleared up first before throwing another spanner into the works, as it were.
I think it's the situation being the way it is that's going to drive it more than anything. So
do you think it's possible that there will be a referendum for Scotland to leave before the UK decides on Brexit?
Yes.
Oh wow. So we might be a teaser for episode 4. We might be in a situation where Scotland votes to leave the UK before the UK leaves the EU.
Ironically, the net effect would be that then the UK was more pro-leave because the majority of Scotland was to remain.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
So if you remove Scotland from the equation, that would make the percentage of
greater. What if the referendum in Scotland is, if the UK leaves, then we leave the UK?
That won't be a question.
You don't think so? Because then...
No, the question will be, should Scotland be an independent country? And the vote, the result of that will be yes. I'm calling that now.
But
I think the Scots will clarify the Brexit issue very clearly, because really, they want to stay in the EU.
Yeah.
So if they leave, then if they leave before Brexit happens, it's really straightforward. We just stay. Whereas rejoining later is way more difficult. And once the Scots have Brexited, then the Welsh and the English were in favor of Brexit anyway. So
right.
It does get a bit easier. Leaving Northern Ireland.
As long as I'm still allowed to come and walk up some mountains, I guess, as long as I can do that,
bring your passport.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. And then
just to what Bart was saying, that there are 50 something SNP Scottish MPs. So if they disappear from the British, from the Westminster Parliament, there will definitely be a very pro-Brexit UK government.
But that's why I was saying, if Scotland wants to stay in the EU, so if they say, if the UK Brexits, then we leave the UK, but if the UK doesn't Brexit, then we stay in the UK, that might push things the other way. That might get some people to say, if the UK falls apart, maybe it's not worth it anymore. Not everyone, of course, but I don't know.
Patrick, we vote. In the last independence referendum, we were told, if you vote for us, to the Better Together campaign, to stay in the UK, you won't be leaving the EU. So I don't think that'll be linked ever again, because the lies that were told then are still haunting people.
Yeah, again. I mean, it wasn't lies. It was just following logic. They didn't realize logic would be thrown out the window.
But that's what it's seen as. Right. You know, so.
Like, David Cameron did his best to court the Scots, to make the Scots feel part of the UK. Boris Johnson doesn't give a flying bleep about the Scots, and they know it.
He was down the road from us about 4 or 5 days ago, literally, and we didn't hear about it until after he left. He did not want any locals knowing he was around. It was a photo op. He was in and out within seconds. Well, minutes.
Surely Scotland doesn't equate the UK with Boris Johnson.
Of course they do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. We love you guys.
Hundreds of years of history, Patrick. The British Parliament has, if you excuse the phrase, screwed over the Scots for centuries. Like, the Irish have a memory of 800 years of oppression, right? It is still talked about 800 years. 800 years. there is exactly that same history that has not been forgotten in the Highlands.
The Scottish have a very long memory.
Well, and the really interesting thing there now is that there's an alternative. There wasn't before, but now you can join the EU and you're fine. You have, as you meant, someone mentioned earlier, I guess it was Bart, if, even if you're a smaller nation or a state, you can rely on a bigger structure, and so you don't have to worry about being too isolated. So now it's doable.
Sorry, all you keep trying to end the show, so I'll let
you go. Well, that is it. Now that's it. Thank you very much for being on. It was enjoyable and enlightening as always. Before we leave, Bart, where can people find your work?
Very easy, bartb.ie, where you'll find links to all the various podcasts and whatnots that I get up to.
Wonderful. Bruce, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter. It's BruceW3, and I am going to start streaming soon, Destiny 2 and Hearthstone Battlegrounds, which I love.
Exciting.
So I'll maybe next time I'm on, I'll share the link. But yeah,
wonderful, Gareth.
And I do Twitter, so at Gareth Westwood. And don't post massive amounts on there, but loiter with intent often.
Perfect. The links to the Twitter accounts will be in the show notes as always. If you enjoy the show, if you want to support us, patreon.com/thephileasclub is the place to go. You will find the link in the show notes. It is easy and quick and it allows the show to exist. So thank you very much for those who already do support it, and thanks to those who will think about doing it after hearing this message. My name is Patrick Beja. I'm Not Patrick on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you want to comment on this episode, you can do so at frenchspin.com. We will talk to you in a few weeks. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.